who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Pratipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient and anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaye. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion. By compassionate aspiration that harms no one. By compassionate speech that makes for clarity. By compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret. By compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. By compassionate endeavor that results in goodness. by a compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by a compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabha. Again and yet again, may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. near to finish suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Shall we look at this morning? Scott.
Well, I'm in a familiar cycle of I'm going to be off property here shortly, and every time that's coming up, there's just like a flood of conversation about essentially seeing people and my family and friends and things that maybe normally maybe come in and just don't seem relevant, and so it's easier to drop. And yeah, so practicing right now, just practicing being looking at it from awareness rather than being identified with it. Wanting to be here, not trying to stop it or push it away or whatever, but just letting awareness run the show rather than the karma.
Yeah, so there's a workshop going on, and it's a familiar one, right? So you know this is about to happen. You're going off the property, and you're practicing with it in a way that, you know, as often people talk about when they're coming on retreat, right? The voices kick in, and things start predicting, and this is going to happen, and it's happening to you in the reverse. You're about to leave the monastery.
That's funny.
And what you're practicing with is letting awareness hold it all, not letting karma dictate where your attention goes.
So, an example is it's been coming in about an old friend of mine who was my best friend for a long time, maybe not as much the first a couple of years before I came to the monastery, but a real significant person in my development in my life, and I haven't talked to him since I've been at the monastery. And so there's been a conversation the last couple of times I went home about whether I'm going to talk to him or not talk to him. And then kind of looking at the history of our
internal conversation.
Yeah. And so, and then there's also this random person came up from college. And, somebody who seemed to mirror life back, who I haven't been in touch with for decades now. All of a sudden this person comes in. And it's sort of like, well, those images of whatever those people are to me are here. Like, it came in. But it seems like what happens all the time, which is there's some sort of impulse or a flash or something, and then ego comes in right after it and starts to make meaning of it, starts to make a plan around it. And that's the part that I want to... So it's not like... So the conversation can go, well, what are those people? I mean, you're just projecting. You're not actually even in relationship to them right now. So it's not like those are, and there is no self, and you know, it can go kind of down that road. And so what I've been practicing with is, well, I don't know why those two people, I don't know why that image came in. And I mean, there's a sense of maybe there's something about letting go, Maybe there's just something about gratitude. Maybe there's a workshop, because the story with my best friend from the past is he has an issue with me being here. Mm-hmm. And so that's been kind of a little interference. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a workshop. Then I'll call him and play with that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Yeah.
And so, and the other question I've been asking is, what's going on now? Is that here? What's here? Because none of that's here. I'm not going to call them now. I'm not going to see them. I'm not. So what's here? And it's just like all of that. It reminds me of this thing that I just keep feeling, which is I really don't know what's happening or what's going to happen. And it feels like there's some kind of plan going on. I mean, how's to explain where I am and what's going on? And so my job is just not to get hooked. Just to stay here so I can be a part. Well, I guess the unfolding is happening no matter what. So my choices are to be present to that and to be on board with that, or to be in a conversation about it.
Yeah. Wow, it's so simple in the way you just laid it out. Mm-hmm. There's a life unfolding here. Life is dropping in things. We can guess, you know, this image of this friend or this image of this old friend from college, and maybe calling, you know. So it's like life is dropping in into your field of awareness these possibilities, we might say. And then what you're watching is ego taking them and just chewing on them, talking about them, mm-hmm. making meaning about them, making plans about them. Well, maybe this, or maybe that, or, you know, and just kind of taking it and running with it.
Yeah.
And you, the practitioner, we might say, is seeing the two options here. Okay, I can either go with that, which I don't really want to do, or I can just stay here and go, I don't know, I don't know. Life is just unfolding. Those are sort of the two places, right?
Yeah.
We can either go with the conversation, or we can be with right here, what's here right now.
Yeah.
I'm not calling anybody right now. It's not appropriate to do anything right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of fits into this larger thing, too, that I've been looking at around, it just flew out. So when even if I'm on the recorder, sometimes it can feel like I'm in the juice of those conversations, uh-huh. and that can feel kind of compelling, and even sort of like enjoyable to some degree. And I always know it ends in a train wreck, and so it feels like that trading the lead in for gold. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing wrong with having a conversation about those people, mm-hmm. or recording about it or whatever. It's just that I've had enough experience of being here and what seems to be this larger plan unfolding that I know it's not even about those people. It's about whatever life's going to help me let go of so I can be with life. Mm-hmm. And so I just have to trust, no matter how juicy it feels or how compelling it feels, that I'm going to choose to drop that. I notice it, but I'm going to be here. Mm-hmm. Because whatever I'm going to be guided through with these things can only happen being here. So if there is something about these, quote, two people, you know, keeping that portal open by being present will be the way that will happen, or at least the way I'll actually be able to receive that. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really helpful in terms of I don't want to think about that, no matter what it is, no matter how compelling or interesting or I think I know it is. I just see the gold, mm-hmm. and I really want to choose that, mm-hmm. and trust life to do the guiding.
Yeah, you really want to choose. You are choosing the gold. And are seeing, even in those moments when maybe the lead is there and there's the juiciness and the going with it and the talking about it and all that, the heart is still choosing the gold.
Yeah.
And is sort of that larger expansive place of, you know, I want this. Because any guidance mm-hmm. that I'm going to get is mm-hmm. really going to come from this moment, in the moment. Who knows what will happen with those guys when you get back home. To your hometown. Who knows?
Yeah.
What you're choosing is the presence of the moment.
And if it really was something about those folks anyway, then I want to be available to the impulse. So if life thinks this will be a great workshop to call my old buddy, then I want to be available to the impulse to do that.
Yes.
But I know it's not going to come from planning it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just know that.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's a surrender, and it's a deep gratitude for the experience of seeing that, uh-huh. that I want to choose, that yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the yes, please, thank you, I love you. It's like it's a deep bow in gassho, mm-hmm. and that's really where I want to live from. And I just know the karma is just going to try to run with all that other stuff, mm-hmm. and I just keep making that movement, you know,
yes.
to the deep bow.
Well, and in making that movement to the deep bow, you are doing that very process of letting go of the lead for the gold of the moment that you are projecting when you're home, you want to do as well.
Uh-huh, yeah. It's a good thing, right? Be practicing now.
The workshop is really starting now, not when you get home.
Yeah, I think that's why I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because I sense that the level of consciousness that slowly happens when I go home starts before I leave the property mm-hmm. with these kinds of conversations. So it's like, I want to be right here all the, you know, as much as I can all the way up until I leave, and then every moment after.
Yeah, which is no different than any other.
It really
is. You know, every day of practice is a day of practice with mm-hmm. whatever content is arising.
Yeah.
And you're seeing it. Okay, here's this content in the context of about to have a trip home.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the content that's arising now, and you're practicing with it in the exact same way that you practice with every other content that arises.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Yeah, and seeing yeah,
it's no different. The process is the importance of the process is no different no matter where I am. Or
that's right.
I am.
Oh, that is such a good point. Yeah, because mm-hmm. it's the process, not the content
yeah.
that we're going to.
I'm exploring the precept not to lead a harmful life, mm-hmm. nor to encourage others to do so. And it arose the other night when, sort of post-discussion we had Thursday night about death
mm-hmm.
and the bird in the mm-hmm. Project Joy radio show, and I was walking with my flashlight, and I thought I was really present and paying attention, and I stepped on one of those little hard shell beetles.
Oh, that's a rugged moment, isn't it?
That is a horrible moment.
Mm-hmm.
And realized I'd killed it. So, mm-hmm. I'm struggling with that. I'm recording around it. And a couple things that I saw was, get a sense there's a young, very young person whose sole identification is an animal lover as a survival strategy, as a small person. Growing up, the pets we had was a refuge and a solace from the adults.
Mm-hmm.
And that identity formed really strong. And I've carried that through and really identified it early in practice,
mm-hmm.
that there's nothing wrong with your retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes she just really dictates the behavior, and I get really super identified with her. And she's young, but she's very precocious. Would be a good way to describe her, 7 or 8,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if this came from life or her or whatever, but the last couple of years I've given up my car.
Mm-hmm.
I've used it to drive here and back to Canada, but when I get here or there, it parks and I ride my bike.
Mm-hmm.
And what dropped in about that is I'm doing my part
mm-hmm.
to steward the earth, and reminds me of a little Zen story of the Zen master who had his disciples sweep in front of him as he walked, so there would be no chance of any tiny little critter even not even be able to discernible to see it, so he wouldn't cause harm.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I get kind of frozen sometimes,
uh-huh.
where it seems like, in quotations, just living as a human, there's going to be a certain amount of harm. There's just, it's sort of inevitable,
mm-hmm.
you know, inevitable. Even just I agonized over my bike. I wore the tires out because I was biking so much. Mm-hmm. Then I had to go buy a new pair of tires. And then I'm like, oh, man, here's another resource. I couldn't find any local sourced. So they're from China, and then it went to, well, they had to be shipped on a boat using tons of diesel. They had to be made in some little sweatshop, I project. Pollution created, perhaps. You know, so I'm just exploring how I can find a middle way to be as conscious and compassionate with the earth and this being, as well as not get to tap into the stories of being paralyzed by it.
Yeah, because really, those are the two extremes, like not caring at all and just doing whatever, and then being paralyzed and really made to suffer.
Right.
Over just being a human, being a creature, really, because every creature, there's
just being a creature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just being a creature.
And have you recorded or looked at it with the mentor?
Yeah, I've done a couple of recordings about it, and what I saw was, the mentor said, which has been said many, many times in practice, is we're always doing the best we can, because if we could do better, we would do better. Mm-hmm. We'd grown to know more, I think, expanded awareness of, oh, there's a practice I've been doing. It's been causing harm, which I didn't see. And now I can practice in a way that the new awareness or new insights will allow me to not lead as harmful life. Not to lead a harmful life. Yeah.
And does Todd get included in that, not leading a harmful life? Or is it the external out there that I don't want to harm? And because it sounds like the process of being paralyzed, of, okay, I can't, you know, I don't want to, and then, you know, it can be harmful to Todd.
Sure.
It's causing him suffering.
Yeah, it causes his suffering and maybe not care for the being.
Yeah.
Because,
there'd
be, I just saw that in that there's a lot of deprivation.
I was imagining riding that bike in some pretty snowy climates myself when you mentioned that. So, you know, there can be some deprivation that can be kind of coming up and not caring for this human being, this being.
Doing harm to this being.
Yeah, doing harm to this being.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And I was looking at death as part of this, and before practice, even just the thought of death would just conjure up so much fear and anxiety and trepidation and angst and sickening dread. And then as practice went along, all that subsided, and I don't know where it went. I've been recording a little bit about it. Like, it's like this, either it feels like I've either slid into ambivalence or apathy about death, or there's an acceptance and equanimity.
Uh-huh.
That, maybe I've just come to a place of acceptance that these horrific stories of death that I listened to in conditioned mind for so long, I'm no longer attending to them.
Uh-huh.
And that it's a, like, I don't know the quote, but it's the interval, something about birth and death, and then enjoy the interval. And it just that I was seeing this morning when I woke, or last night especially, walking home. And these starry nights.
Uh-huh.
I live in a place with a lot of light pollution, so we don't get many stars. But these starry nights, you just got to turn the flashlight off and stop.
Yes.
And stare.
It's pretty magnificent.
It's pretty compelling. And just staring into the stars, and I don't know much about the cosmos, but I know there's billions, theoretically.
Yeah.
They say billions and billions, and I'm just thinking there's billions, And there's billions of people, too, in this just little, tiny little planet that we have. And it's just all miraculous that I'm even here, then I was even born.
Yeah.
What are the odds?
What are the odds
that everything came together that I would be created?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Oh my goodness, that is so pretty cool.
Yeah.
And to slip into that place of, I project such expansiveness.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh my God, it's a miracle. All of this creation, all of this life. Billions and billions, people, stars, everything. And that, in that expanded awareness of just awe,
in awe,
is the antithesis of what ego would drag the attention into, of obsession with death or concern or paralysis about, am I gonna, what am I, you know, and to make that movement, as you say, into just the magnificence of life in, you know, as exemplified by the starry night. I mean, that's a movement to make, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's a middle way, I sense there's a middle way to lead not a harmful life and not to encourage others to. I sense there's a middle way, and through the spirit of inquiry and continuing to look at it and exploring it, and just to hear, like you said, just reflected back that times when I get paralyzed by it, I can know that I've just slid onto that once that, you know, deep side of the duality of. I'm just caught in a story about you better not do nothing because something will cause some harm, and then I'm breaking a precept.
Yes, yeah.
That's where it goes.
So conditioning will take anything, especially or including the language of practice, right? To make you suffer.
Yeah.
So anytime you find yourself in that, okay, I better not do anything because I'm going to hurt something. It's going to be harmful, and you know, okay, flag. I know that's a conditioned place.
Yes.
Not going to go there. And then that movement that we were just talking about.
Right.
Look at the stars. Look at a tree.
Yeah.
Get here. Where are your feet? What's something that you can be, you know, find in life that you can be grateful for?
Yeah.
You know, all that movement that you just described with the stargazing, right?
Yeah.
Is the movement away from that conditioned place.
Right.
And as you say, there's a middle way.
Yeah.
That's the only place that the middle way will have access to us. You know, when we're in that place of awe, gratitude, well-being, basically here.
Yes.
And then if there is any information about what to do, or the next product to purchase, or how to get to from here to there, or whatever, that's where it'll reach us. That's where it has access.
Right, that's where we have access
to. Not in that other conversation of, you better, don't break a precept, you shouldn't,
Because when you're saying that, for the most part, I saw that the intelligence that animates and that small, still voice fairly consistently guides me to a not a harmful life, for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
And if I step on a bug in the night, there's no intention.
Of course not.
No.
Not.
It hurts the heart very much. So.
Yeah, and in that place, that place of it hurts the heart. Then the moment is how to care for the being whose heart is hurt, right?
Yeah.
You know, how can care be shown in this moment, in these circumstances?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Penny.
What's just arising out of that conversation is Sherry saying, your goodness is established.
Yes. You know?
Your goodness is established. And I was looking at, I have a jumble going on right now. So I'll just jumble along.
Just jumble along.
So what I was looking at was, the other night I mentioned that it seemed to me that all my stories make me a victim.
Uh-huh.
And so I was looking at one of those stories. And first of all, given that stories come from conditioning, come from ego, which is separate from life, by definition I'm a victim.
Good point. Yeah.
I mean, if I'm separated from life, then I'm a victim of whatever's happening.
Yeah.
So I think it's almost inevitable that they make me a victim. But lately, since about September, I've just been living this kind of non-stop schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a busy person before, and then the election happened. So I watched on Thursday, just getting into a spit about my schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And Friday was just another busy day. And what was so interesting was that I knew I was just in a... That I'm in this victim place because I'm exactly where I chose to be.
Ah.
Uh-huh. And it's really hard to maintain that.
Oh, yeah.
But it's possible. And, and there's a story that goes along that somehow maintains that. Yeah. And so so Thursday or Friday evening, the second Friday of the month, there's a group that protests it. This doesn't protest. Puts out what we're for at the corner of 4 and 49 in Angel's Camp, and so that was one of the things on my schedule. And it was so interesting because I knew that once I got there, I'd be fine.
Uh-huh.
And I was.
Yeah.
And I think what happened was that, first of all, in interacting, I got out of me, but also it reminded me why I was there.
Uh-huh.
It was a reminder why I was there. And when I get home alone, I can get into this this little small place about somehow I'm being put upon to do what I'm choosing to do. It's the darndest thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And so setting myself literally side by side with friends who are saying the same kinds of things was a reminder of being called out of that, why we're there, and how good it feels.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I like those people. Plus, we have a good time. You know, it was all that.
It's the power of Sangha.
Hmm?
It's the power of Sangha.
The power of Sangha. You're right. And there was a helpful suggestion recently that when we're suffering, that there can be a distinction between the content steps we can take
mm-hmm.
in response to the suffering, and also looking at the process of the suffering,
mm-hmm.
and those are kind of two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So Saturday morning, I came down to water, and as I was walking home, I was talking about this peevishness I'd gotten into, and then let the mentor talk, and it was really helpful because I don't remember exactly what the mentor said now, but that distinction was being made.
Mm-hmm.
So there are these things I can do, and just watch what is that goes on, and that places me in this position. And it's really, you know, I think it really comes down to some belief in separation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the victim place is a separate place.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm wholly where I am, wholly doing what I choose to do, there can't be a victim there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just I'm just saying that it's just fascinating to watch conditioning separate me and ego separate ego from what the person authentically has chosen to do. So I'll just say that much about it.
That is, it's a fascinating process.
Mm.
And to check out one other layer of the process to see if this is your experience, because it sounds like it, there was an awareness of all of this happening mm-hmm. all the time.
Yep.
So there's an awareness that is happening, and then an attention on what's going on, kind of looking at it really closely, sounds mm-hmm. like, and recording about it and practicing mm-hmm. with it and getting guidance from the mentor about it mm-hmm. and understanding and all that. And then there's the experience itself where you can feel and almost, I don't know, you wouldn't say this, but maybe be in a way the peevishness,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there's all of these layers which mm-hmm. which by looking at it on a process level is available,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to see all of that. And by which the human being is not wedded to the identity of the ego victim role.
Yeah, that's helpful, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first thing that came up was, I'm really unhappy, so I've got to be in conditioning.
Uh-huh, there it is.
Yeah, there it
yeah.
is, yeah.
There's that.
And then choosing to go to the mentor to look at that with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a way of not being identified with it, and the unhappiness of being identified with it. And a lot of it also is to take away the intention, the authentic intention behind these activities.
Say that again?
It's to draw me away from the authentic intention that gave rise to my being involved in these activities.
Yeah.
And again, it's a divorce from one's authenticity. I think that maybe that's the whole thing about suffering and being a victim. We're divorced from what is most authentic.
Yeah, that's what you said a minute ago. That's where the illusion of the separate self, the separation happens.
Yep.
So there was at some point, and continues to be, or you wouldn't still be doing it, an authentic heart's desire to participate in all these things
mm-hmm.
that really, as you have accounted, really light you up in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's this attempt that ego makes to divorce you of that authentic heart's impulse.
Right.
that is still kind of running through it all. Like I said, or else you wouldn't be doing it.
Right.
So it comes in right before it's time to go to the activity. Comes in when you think about your schedule. Comes in whenever it can find a little opening.
And the schedule thing is a big opening for it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. That's an old thing, but go ahead.
Well,
it's one of the buttons.
It's the It's the tried and true. Schedule thing.
Right.
Like that. You
mean? Yeah. I mean that. I can go back to RLB calls from, 1857.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about being too busy.
Or isn't it fun that we're so predictable that way, or conditioning is so predictable?
I interrupted you.
Yeah, no. Well, that's just it, right? So it goes in, and then it puts that little wedge in through the conversation, mm-hmm. and then grabs our attention, and then to the degree that it can have our attention, it kind of draws that wedge bigger and bigger. But you thwarted it. And I just want to emphasize or underline what you said, because it's such a helpful tool, which is, I'm unhappy, I must be in condition.
Oh, yeah.
There's that go-to place.
The other thing I thought was just really helpful was this whole thing around time. There's not enough time.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the American disease, I think. But what I was seeing was, when I get into that, this is what the mentor was helping me see. When you get into that, the mentor said, you have all the time that everybody else has.
Yeah.
You have all the time in the world.
Uh-huh.
So when I get into that, there's not enough time. What I'm saying is, somebody out there isn't giving me enough time.
Oh.
And that's another thing, just pits me against life.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a sense that there's something called time that I'm not getting enough of.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a belief. Talk about a fantasy, a delusion.
And talk about an actual truth from identity's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody is not giving me enough time.
Right. Along with all the other enoughs I'm not getting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if I'm an identity, mm-hmm. that's absolutely true.
Yep.
Someone, in this case Penny, is not giving me, identity, enough time.
Yep.
And so, and what it's actually doing is going head first into what that truth that the mentor or that insight that you got from the mentor,
mm-hmm.
of you've got as much time as anybody, we have plenty of time for everything, and then boy, conditioning runs headlong right into that with that statement.
Right.
So it can feel deprived, it can feel victimized, it can feel not enough,
right.
Scarcity.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah, fascinating. Thank you. Jim, did I see your name?
It's all very interesting. last Sunday, I think, I talked about coming out of the funk, the fog.
Mm-hmm.
As I sat there in the group, it became really clear. I've talked about this forever. It's one of those I've talked about this forever thing. And all of us do. It became really clear that I live in a constant conversation of I'm not the right person.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get it. I see it every now and then. I hear it talking to me every now and then. But it's pretty much constant.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that in group.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw, well, if that's the case, what that means is, if things can mean anything, okay, I'm never going to be the right person. I can relax.
Can I reflect?
Yeah.
So what you saw in group was sitting there was that you live in a constant conversation of I'm not the right person. And so what you saw from that is, okay, well, if I'm not the right person, I'll never be the right person, then I can relax.
Yeah. know, conversation is a strong word for it. It's just a, it's just a belief. It's just
the way it is.
It's just how it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, between last Sunday and today, I've just been doing the things I normally do, living the life I normally live. Mm-hmm. And being aware of that, the subtlety of the right person wouldn't do this. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't feel this way, wouldn't say this, wouldn't do this, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it started to fade. Uh-huh. It's just kind of, I'm not making any claims. It's just interesting to see it. It's just interesting to get it, that it's to see that it happens, how ingrained it is, and how it too can become something that is simply paid attention to. It's noticed and dropped, noticed and dropped. But it had to be noticed first.
And dropped. Yeah, that's really huge. So it's there, that story, belief, just the water that you could swim in if you wanted to, right? It's there, but when you just went about your life, living your life as you normally would, without in the
process. Noticing it.
Yeah.
It wasn't without it.
Well, without believing it,
sensing it, knowing on it, is hearing it.
So you're noticing it and dropping it. Notice, drop. Yeah. Notice, drop. So in that week of living your life just the way you normally would, noticing it was there, sort of just kind of, you know, we have our hand for the recorder. We have our hand out there, like it's out there, not internalized or not identified with, but out there noticing it and dropping it. Then you can just live your life.
Yeah. And the other thing I noticed about it was it doesn't have suggestions.
It doesn't have suggestions.
Or how, what to do instead.
Oh, right.
No, that's not true. It does. But they're always the same thing. It has no intention of helping me do anything different.
Yeah.
And when I look at it, suggestions are absurd anyway.
So that's important.
And again, suggestions, it's not so much a voice saying something to me. It's just an internal movement.
Yeah, kind of an internal movement of
hatred. Okay. An internal movement of, I hate you.
Wow. Yep, there it is. So there's this internal movement of hatred. I hate you. And
if it weren't, I mean, you know, I don't feel this big hate.
Right, it's not a big, it's
but all very if it were a little internal movement of kindness or love, it would be very different.
Yeah, it's not, I love you exactly as you are and I'll help you be any way you want to be. It's, I hate you and you're not living the right life and you're not the right person. And it's, yeah, and it's all very subtle and not a big glaring voice, because of course you would catch on to that. But it's just so there. But you caught on to that too, obviously. Yeah. Wow.
And so if I did say, you know, without changing behavior, there'll be no changing consciousness. Uh-huh. So if I did want to change of behavior. Perhaps being on to what is just basically an energy drain.
Yep.
Will free up
energy
to make choices that I might choose to make.
Exactly. Because what you're pointing to is what we were talking about earlier, the difference between content and process. It's a process behavior change, right? That you just laid out. So if I can just be on to this process that's an energy suck, if it is, you know, then I'll be free to do what feels quite naturally a choice to make. Naturally, effortlessly.
I had an experience yesterday. I don't know exactly how it relates or doesn't relate to what we're talking about. But I found that I take a prescription. I have one prescription that I take, and somehow or another, it got out of my awareness that I ran out of it, and I'm supposed to take it every day. And so, long story short, I ran into the pharmacy in town to see if I could get them to give me like a handful of them, because I ordered my next, was on the way. And I thought I was just going to run in, you know, they'd give me a couple pills and I'd come home. Well, it was just the most amazing, you know. There was hardly anybody there in the pharmacy. There was stuff everywhere. I mean, millions of bags of pills and stuff. I don't know what was going on. But, you know, they were all in these boxes and stuff. And so, yeah, they could give me a couple of pills, but the pharmacist was out to lunch, so no wonder. So, you know, I came back when she said to come back. I mean, it was just dragged out, and it was just the most, like, wow, how does this sort of thing happen? So I was really pretty amenable to the whole situation, because, you know, I'm the one who forgot, and who am I to expect they're going to just drop everything and give me a few pills? So I just hung out waiting for it, and it was waiting and waiting and waiting. And I was finding myself getting really kind of frustrated and irritated. And then I looked up, and this woman, she was waiting too. She was waiting in the line to pick up her. She had a cart, and in the cart was this dog. The absolutely most adorable face I think I have ever seen in my life. It was, I mean, it was happy dog. And I looked at that dog, and everything just ended. I mean, it was just amazing how, you know, projecting back and forth. And I went, and I asked the lady, would she mind if I took a photograph of her dog? I said, this dog is just made my day. It's so cute. And so I took a picture, and you know, the iPhones now have this thing called Live. I don't even know. I didn't even know. But anyway, I took the picture, and every time I would, there were like, I took about five or six pictures, and when I would slide to the next one, the dog would be moving. And one of them, I don't know how I did it. I got to learn how, because it moved the whole time. I think it's called a GIF. Uh-huh. I don't know what I did, but that is the cutest thing. Now I'm gonna just keep that, and every time I get, you know, kind of depressed or frustrated, I mean, I can't look at it without smiling. Oh. It is just, the dog is smiling,
yeah,
and it's like this. The tail's going, and
Talk about a quick disidentifying tool.
Absolutely.
Right? To go to
place. But it was such an example of how, you know, how we can do, how we can make our lives miserable by where the attention is.
Yeah,
so there was the attention now on the dog, and I didn't care about the pills. I didn't care about this woman that was talking to the one customer for 20 minutes and attending to all the rest of us waiting. Yeah. And so it was just a really, really, you know, perfect example of the quality of your life is determined by the focus of your attention.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. Yeah. In that split second, you could watch the attention going to the moment through the adorable face of that dog.
Yeah. And accessing all that was in me that was joyful and happy. It was right there. It was just right there immediately.
Well, and you know what's occurring to me about that process is it is a perfect example of how the heart automatically chooses gold over lead. You know, the imagery like that earlier. It's like there you could stay in the frustration and the what's going on and what's you know, and misery and all that. But when faced with this option, you went right there in a split second.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't even any thought. I mean, there was no choice to do anything else. It was just
obvious, so obvious. I'm going to be delighted about this beautiful little animal.
Yeah.
No conversation.
Part Shih Tzu and part poodle.
Oh.
Just, I want one of those.
You have one right there on your phone.
I do. Yeah.
That's
really fun.
Thank you. Yeah.
First of all, I just want to say the conversation about being the right person was really helpful, since I have a heavy dose of that going on and hear a lot of, you know, that was not the right thing. And in the conversation, I just realized it's a moment to laugh because I don't want to be the right. It's like that's good news, and I had never seen it like that before. It's like every time I hear that wasn't the right thing to do. Yay! You know, it seems that the place that we might.
I am not going for ego's identity of right person. To do.
You know, it seems like instead of being a cause for suffering, which it's been so long, it is maybe a cause for celebration. That, like, thank God.
Talk about a shift, right?
Yeah, I didn't go to right, and I hadn't really seen that before. So that was really, really useful.
Oh, so helpful to see. Yeah. You know, another option. Oh, I don't have to feel bad when that tells me that. I can celebrate.
Right. Yeah. And the conversation about relationships is really helpful. And I had this conversation with a guy recently. There's practice and there's unconditional love and practicing unconditional love. And in a way, it's been kind of a koan for me. It's like, so what does unconditional love look like with these folks that there's so many, much long-term karma and going to have needs met with them, you know? What is it to be, to have let go of that and to just be in unconditional love? And because that's what the heart really, really desires. I mean, that place of going to get the needs met is just, you know, it's a bummer, you know. it just doesn't work.
And been there, tried that.
I tell you, I made a lifetime exploration of that. I find myself today. I'm going to visit a relative, and it's like why, you know? It's like,
who put this on?
Like, why, you know, why, you know?
can't even remember what what was the impetus for this, you know, and why I would even put myself in this position, you know, or what, you know, and then so that's interesting right there, and then, you know, the information is, you know, it's what's happening, and just trust life, and see, just be present and see what there is to see with the whole thing. And I've been noticing that the last visit I had out into the world to visit friends and family, it was a big awakening for me, and it's taken a long time to wear this one away, but I saw that things have changed, you know, that you know, that whole focus, that's been a long time focus of, okay, going to go see these friends and, you know, family and all this. It's not my life. Mm-hmm. It's not my life. Mm-hmm. I was able to just let it go. Wow. This is my life. Yeah. You know, Sangha is my family. And it was just a big shift. Wow. And so the conditioning came in, well, done to that. You're never going to see those people again.
Yeah, I'm so glad you have so, real families.
Really, yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah, and it comes from that place of just needing to have, it's a clean, you know, it's like there's got to be some external, I just saw that as I was talking, like, yeah, there's got to be, like, okay, so, yeah, so now we, yeah.
Ego's got to come Ego's in got to and have, mess with that beautiful right. letting go experience right. that you've had,
yeah.
and got to do something with it, otherwise, how are you going to pay attention to it?
Yeah.
And so what it's doing is, okay, good, now, got them done.
Right. Right, and now we're going to shift the clinging to the sangha in this family. You know?
And then ask, why am I right. going to see those people today?
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. And I, now, you know, I have to be the right person here because, God, if they don't like me, then, you know. Yes.
Now the stakes are
even now higher. I'm sunk. Yeah.
Such a suffering inducing.
Yeah, yeah. So just, I don't know. I have no answers for any of this. But what I'm experiencing is sort of like a letting go and a gap, and who knows, and also just a trust that this is part of the journey of learning unconditional love.
Yeah.
And that having that necessity. I project that there's probably a part of that is a necessity to be able to just let go.
Yeah.
And, you know, and see, well, what's next?
Well, that's the process that's coming mm-hmm. forth so loudly here, is the process of, I don't know,
yeah.
trust
yeah.
and letting go, and just the heart's desire to really look at this koan of unconditional love, family, mm-hmm. friends, mm-hmm. sangha, unconditional love. How did all those, you know, and as you said at the beginning, you know, I don't know, mm-hmm. I'm just letting it unfold, but there has been that letting go, mm-hmm. that experience you described, and the space mm-hmm. that is here mm-hmm. now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just thought something, I don't know, we'll see. It's something cool happened. It feels cool to me, but who knows. For the first time, there's going to be an opportunity to go, you know, spend some time away from the monastery again. And I'm not staying with friends and family. I've made other arrangements, and then it just dropped in that rather than visiting and, you know, doing the things that have been the things I've done in the past, mm-hmm. what the heart really wants to do is find opportunities to be of service with folks, and you know, see what little things people have been needing, you know, offering my service.
Yeah.
You know, if there's something that, you know, I know some folks have some ailing parents and that they might really appreciate someone to just come and assist them with some things to do with their mom and dad. And, you know, it's the first time that it's ever like, you know, and just seeing the opportunity, how much more supportive of the privileged environment.
Uh-huh.
To be able to go and be engaged in with folks, and let's, you know, what is it that we can do together to, you know?
Yeah, because that the way that you're describing that kind of a visit, mm-hmm. it's all in service of service. Mm-hmm. To get to quote, to kind of paraphrase what Sherry's been saying, mm-hmm. I want to serve that which makes me want to serve.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And it is such a it's like living the privileged environment out in the world.
Yeah.
Because it's not about those interpersonal relationships, the old karma.
Yeah.
It's about being of service and, I might say, living unconditional love.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There it is. In the heart, and that was in the heart to arrange your trip in that way, mm-hmm. that could be practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, things just have to be. Things just have to be worn away in time, and you know, you just, and you never know.
And they are being.
Yeah.
You know, it's mm-hmm. so, you know, I keep remembering Sherry doing this image of just walking along. You know, I think she said it on one of the radio shows, and then again in the Thursday group, it's like things just have to be worn away. Yeah. And our life is just unfolding.
Yeah.
We're just walking along our path, and it's